And can I say I love your eye? Your eyeliner is amazing. I can't do mine. I'm rubbish at it. It's really bad.
Thank you. Actually, part of it is tattooed. So I'm cheating.
See, I'm looking really, this is going to go in the podcast. I'm looking really closely at the screen now going, how is that tattooed? Oh, okay. It looks amazing. Never have it gone, go away. Hello there and welcome to Game Changers. So I am super lucky today. I have got a fabulous, fabulous industry person who has been willing to talk to me, Nina Kim. Would you mind introducing yourself to the vast, hopefully, audience and telling us a little bit about yourself before we get into the nitty-gritty?
Sure. Thank you for having me. I'm Nina Kim. I'm a senior designer at Rare. I've worked on mobile games, console games, and I've been in the industry for a little over 11 years.
That's amazing. So a senior game designer, that's pretty darn cool. And I know from my experience, that's where a lot of, at least my students want to be. So I'm in the game design team, so I know that's where they want to be. But for anyone who's not so familiar with all the roles that go into game, and there are a lot, could you give me an overview of what a senior game designer does? And if you don't mind, just giving me a little bit more of an insight into exactly kind of what area you sort of specialize into, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so this is a varied answer that I give. It really depends on what studio you're at as well, because being a senior designer at Rare, it means something different than other studios. So currently, what that means in my role is to kind of look at the whole picture of what the design vision is, and then translate our designs into that, and then help the team and other designers kind of implement towards that goal. Whereas in other instances, I've been more heavily in implementation. In my current role, it's more feature owning and kind of guiding the higher level vision, and then kind of giving guidance into how to implement that.
That's super cool. So I'm going to ask a question because I don't know what that meant in terms of feature owning. What does feature owning mean?
Yeah, so currently it's like, I'm trying to avoid any specifics, but it's like...
Yes, please, because I don't want Rich to come and hunt me down and kill me. I don't need that.
It's like kind of taking charge over a specific part or area of the game. So if I were to use like a general thing, maybe that's like ship combat, and that's a feature that you're working on. And then you kind of detail how that works and kind of try to keep in contact with other people, other teams that are, that work alongside anything that would touch ship combat, and then kind of collaborate so everything works within the game.
That's amazing. I wanted to ask, I thought I can maybe guess what that means, but I'm going to ask because it's silly to just sort of sit here with an expert sitting in front of me who can tell me what that actually is, and me sitting here going, well, I think I know what feature it is. It'll be fine. So one of the things we talked about briefly in our preamble to this chat today, Nina, was essentially like, you're a woman, you're a game designer, not the best represented gender in game design, if I dare say that. So I'm super interested in how you got into game design in the first place. And if we could talk also a little bit about what your experience has been like as a woman in the game design world, that would be amazing. But can you give me an idea about how you got into game design?
It's kind of a long story, but...
Tell it, I'm going to shut up.
Well, at first, my brother was working in the industry in customer support at Big Fish, and I was interested in doing art, and so I was constantly talking to him and his coworkers about doing art, but at some point, you know, I had imposter syndrome, and that kind of went over, and I kind of, you know, I was like, I won't do it, and so I just kind of followed my brother into customer support, but he had moved on to working in QA, And I had really good managers at Big Fish, so they kept pushing me towards, they're like, look, you seem creative. Maybe you should go for a QA role or like a different section of customer support. And because I had good managers, I ended up working in QA. And while I was in QA, I was interested in production. So I shadowed a lot of the producers to see how I could transition into a production role. But a lot of my friends in QA really wanted to get into design, but there were no entry-level roles. So I started a free-to-play game design club where we studied and analyzed each game and then broke it down just to get that practice. And then just started, you know, respectfully messaging designers who came to that club. Because they were surprised that people had this much interest. And so I asked if we, anyone who was interested, could deliver a pitch to them just to practice pitching a game. And so we set that up. The director was great and he set it up for my team. And everyone who was interested pitched, and that went really well. And I, so one of the designers encouraged me to pitch as well, even though I was like, I'm too stupid to be a game designer. Like, I just can't. And so, she was like, just do it. Just pitch. It'll be fun. So I did that. And they decided to open an entry-level role because there was so much interest. And the same designer encouraged me to apply. And again, I was like, no, I'm not suited for this, but still really encouraged me to. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And eventually that led to the great thing about it was a blind test. So the great thing about it was I ended up getting hired as a designer, and I didn't expect that at all. What was really shocking to me, because I hadn't kind of encountered this before, but a lot of the people I knew who had applied, when I got the job, they kind of reacted in a way that I didn't expect, which was, oh, it's because she's a cute girl, that's why she got hired as a designer. And I, like, that hurt. I was also like,
I have got my shook face on because sorry, I had to say that because no, I was not good.
I confronted them. I was like, first off, I'm not that cute, and second off, like, it was a blind test. And really, like, the designers and the director there, they, like, I think they knew that this sort of stuff happened, and they had that blind test to, like, kind of, you know, make sure, kind of safeguard. And I really appreciated that because it really saved me. I was like, you cannot treat me this way. It was a blind test. So I really, really appreciated that. I really value and I'm grateful to the team there because they considered everything very, very well. So that's how I ended up being a designer. And it's funny, on the topic of being a woman in the industry, I was really lucky because Big Fish was, there was a lot of women, which isn't as common in the industry, especially around that time. And I didn't really realize that until I moved to other studios. But I did see some behaviors that shocked me. Like, he had a Lyft driver. I don't know if we have Lyft over here. It's more like Uber. And she was interested in joining industry. So I recommended her. And she went through the same process. She was in customer support. And then she went to QA. And then she was interested in marketing. So I had her talk to some of the marketing people on my team, and she shadowed them, and then she went into a marketing role. But I saw her get the same treatment. She was gorgeous. And so a lot of people were like, how could they give her this role? It's just because she's pretty. And I'm like, that is not true. I'm like, and like, she did the work. And like, I had it fired back at me. They were like, how do you know? And I was like, because I specifically set her up for these meetings and I saw her go to the meetings. Like, a lot of the people were like, oh, why didn't they give me this role? And I've been working for her forever. I'm like, but you didn't go to those meetings. So, yeah, very strange, this sort of...
From what I can tell, it sounds like you've made a lot of your own, not opportunities, but you've made sure that your passion and your interest are visible and you have actioned that interest. Because you set up the design club, like it, you did a thing and it came out for your benefit. But that obviously from what you're saying, your narrative wasn't the sort of the finish line for you. It was just like, I'm super interested in this. There isn't an entry level position. People seem supportive here. This is amazing. I can at least get some experience, but not.
Yes, exactly. I think that's the key there is it wasn't like, when are you gonna open an entry level position? I'm interested, do it. Like, it was more like, I'm interested, anything you could provide, I'm thirsty. I just want to know. And even if that's redirecting me to books or whatever, that's great too. So I think that's the key, because really people can tell when you're genuinely, burning passionately for the thing and when you're just like being an opportunist, which is not bad either. Like, it's good to look for opportunities, but like,
I think there's looking, isn't there? And then there's expecting. And it sounds like some of the people who were being negative towards you and deciding that because you're female, it was based on the way you look and not actually on your talent. Then that's sort of a jealousy thing, because they didn't think to do the thing that you did and learn what you learned and take the opportunities when they're offered.
I do think it's tricky too, though, because I think when I talk to people about this, some of it is some people feel like, why should I do the extra work? Like, these opportunities should be there for me. Why do I have to do extra? Like, I have a job. This is how I make my living. I don't have enough calories to like do the extra work. And I think that's fair. But it is also like the industry is like very saturated right now. There aren't that many positions, so it is sort of like it's not gonna feel extra to you if that's something you just naturally want to do. And so I'm not dissing anyone who doesn't want to do that on their off time, but like, if it's something that naturally comes to you, it will be easier for you to get those roles and opportunities, I think.
Yeah, especially if you've taken a role, and I talk to students a lot about this, because sometimes our dream role doesn't immediately show up for us. Yeah. Like you say, it's a heavy market out there at the moment. So our dream job might not be the first thing that we encounter and the first thing that we apply for or get. But that foot in the door, and then the proving yourself, you know, showing that you're the person who, maybe if this opportunity does come up, you know, look how hard I've worked and look how interested I am. That can only be a good thing. And obviously you're kind of living proof in terms of it gave you the pathway towards what you actually found you wanted to do and wanted to kind of be, you know. And it's just sad. It just makes me sad that people will sort of go, oh, it's just based on something because, you know, you obviously can't really do it. Because
Yeah, it's weird how often that happens. It's very jarring. And like certain instances too, I'm kind of going on a tangent, but being a woman in the industry, like I've been kind of sheltered. So like a lot of the time I'm like, no, that doesn't happen. But then I'll see little instances of like, as a woman suggesting an idea, or it might not even be a woman, but it might be like a more introverted person suggesting an idea and then being ignored, and then have someone suggest the same idea and then get celebrated. And it's like, wait, Why is that happening? And for a long time, I was like, oh no, that's just because I'm quiet. But through multiple experiences, I'm like, oh, maybe it's because I'm a woman. And I didn't really realize it until my husband pointed it out. He's like, this is happening to you specifically. And it's not just because you're quiet. And the thing that really helped me was when we were in those situations, he would actually point it out. He would be like, so you just said exactly what Nina said. And then I'm like, oh, wow. And people would pause and they'd be like, yeah, I guess so. And it's sort of like, oh, they didn't intentionally do that. But for some reason, they're not recognizing it. So it's a very weird thing that happens.
I'm super interested, if you don't mind me. And this isn't like digging into your psyche. I'm a massive introvert, as like huge introvert. If you take me to a party where I don't know anyone, I will be the one in the kitchen, or if there's a pet, with the pet. Do you know what I mean? Like, that yes. will be me. And I try to explain to students that, you know, being an introvert doesn't necessarily mean like you're crippled by it. It just means you get your energy from a different place. Like, you get your energy from going off and just being quiet and not from big groups of people and, you know, partying. For a starter, because to be fair, and this is a bit of a sweeping statement, because there's lots of different people in the game industry, but in general, game attracts people who are a little quieter, because they can go into another world and they can be someone else and they can sort of travel without kind of traveling, if that makes sense. So how have you coped with being an introvert, and seeing as now people are going, hey, that person has just said the thing you've said, which was brilliant, by the way. They're not brilliant, you're brilliant. How are you learning to kind of like start tackling those moments? Or I'm super interested, because when people say something a bit like off with me or sexist, or I don't react, but my brain's going, what the heck was, hold, that wasn't, you can't say that. And I'll just go, okay. But my brain sort of after, it's like having this big debate about that. They did say the thing, you're not imagining it, they said the thing and they shouldn't have said that thing. And I just wonder how you're dealing with it, because I think you've got to realization way quicker than I ever got to. So how are you doing that?
I think I understand your question.
It was very round and about. I tend to do.
I'll just talk about my experience surrounding that topic, I guess. A lot of, it's an ongoing challenge. Definitely. I'm going to be honest. It has been a challenge. But it does help that people are more aware of it now than I think before. They're more considerate of it. They're like, oh, there's different types of people and different people communicate in different ways. And there are different options of ways of communication, especially since COVID. We have like text based communication, which really helps me, because I can take the time to think about my response and give my responses, which has been very helpful. But it is also kind of pushing towards habits or ways of phrasing and learning how to communicate that way as well. I've also had a lot of anxiety. I am a very anxious person, and a lot of that has been just practice. It's been a lot of practice of putting myself into situations and practicing different ways of addressing it. Yeah.
I genuinely, that you saying that it's practice and that it does make you anxious, you're 12 years into the industry, like 11, 12 years into the industry. I think it's super important for people to hear you genuinely say that, because when I meet students, sometimes it is that crippling, I don't want to talk to people, I feel overwhelmed, I can't do this. And some idiot, me, coming up and going, you know, game is a team sport and we're going to have to find a way for you to be okay with talking to people. And I mean that in a respectful way, because I had the same. 18, no thank you. Didn't want to talk to people. I completely understand it. But hearing you say that it's a journey, it's something you're having to kind of like work on that.
Yeah,
Food
it's baby
is
steps,
important.
really. It's
Yeah.
really baby steps. 'Cause like before, I used to be super anxious and so much that like I wouldn't eat in front of people. I'm still scared of people, honestly. I wouldn't have been able to do this back then. But yeah, it was crippling fear, really, more than anxiety. And a lot of it was just throwing myself into situations where I had to come face to face with that. And it was not easy at all.
No,
No.
and that's that problem, isn't it? It's sort of acknowledging that it isn't easy, but it still has to be done. Would
Yeah.
that be a fair thing to say in terms of being in the industry and
Yeah, I
being a
mean,
part of the team?
I think when it comes to these sorts of things, like the practice, especially when it comes to things that are so controlling, like anxiety and fear, it's like sort of like, yes, practice and it can be on your own time and your own measure, but like the way I view it is, if you're taking a step in any direction, at least you're moving. But if you don't take any steps, you're just stuck and you're putting yourself in that situation where you're going nowhere and that's not doing anything for you. Maybe you do take a step backwards and you like sometimes I would be like, I'm gonna do karaoke and it was be the worst experience I've ever had. And I'd be like, I don't wanna do that again. And it feels like a step backwards, but you are moving. And so as long as you keep moving, you will eventually get there.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
genuinely, I think it's genuinely super important that people hear that because it is so challenging for some people. Some people obviously breeze it, and I'm very in awe of those people who just breeze into situations and are fine. I know I'm not, but I also know I have to encourage people to start getting to be fine with
Yeah.
those situations as well.
Yeah.
So
It's definitely
hearing
not
you say.
easy.
But
Yeah.
hearing you say it is baby steps, and hearing that analogy of any movement is good movement, because otherwise you're just going to get stuck. It's genuinely super, super important.
Yeah,
So
it is. Oh, sorry.
no.
What's helped me is kind of setting expectations, like, oh, I'm gonna go into this and I know it might be terrible, but what am I gonna get out of it? So if it's a terrible experience, it's like analyzing why was it terrible? What could I do differently next time? Will that change the experience? And then like they're very actionable things. So the next time I'm like, okay, I did these things differently. Did it work? No, it didn't. It still was terrible. Maybe if I tweak little versions of this, I can get to, and that's actually how it worked. It's like I kept tweaking and I was like, okay, maybe it was the wrong karaoke experience. Maybe I need a different group. Maybe I need to start with trusted fellows. And it really changed things because like each if you keep doing the same thing, sometimes that might not work because maybe the situation isn't ideal and it's not really doing anything for you. So it is sort of like evaluating what can be done differently and like maintaining those like expectations. Yeah.
Like just so super important, because and also that idea of not keep doing the same thing because it failed, but adjust
Yeah.
and try something ever so slightly different. So, oh God, so important. But people will listen to you where they don't listen to me, because I'm the lecturer and you're the person in industry. So it's
I
so
feel like they should
important.
listen to you as well. Everyone has their their nuggets of knowledge. I think everyone has value.
Oh,
But
absolutely. But it's one of those things where if that person in the classroom tells you go, someone comes in from industry and goes exactly the same thing that Sharon probably told you 2 weeks ago. They go, oh, really? No one said.
that needs to change though. Like I feel like you'll gain so much if you just like really dig deep and be like, what is this person saying and what can I take from it? There's always something.
There is genuinely, there's always a takeaway from pretty much genuinely every conversation, because the more you talk to people, the more they kind of open up and just tell you a little bit of something that you didn't know before, and you go, oh, hold on, because you did it and you talked about imposter syndrome. The more I talk to women, the more I hear those words. And as someone who suffers from it as well, how are you, if you don't mind me asking, how do you deal with that? Because you're in a position of authority, you're in a position of leadership, you are encouraging your team to all get on board the project and the area that you're working. How do you, if you don't mind me asking, how do you deal with imposter syndrome?
It's also still an ongoing challenge. But it's definitely improved with just framing. But before, it was sort of like, okay, imposter syndrome became a term that was more commonly used. But whenever it was brought up, it was like, that's not me, because imposter syndrome is for people who actually have value and are an expert, but they don't think they are. And I was like, that's not me. I am actually not an expert. I don't know what I'm talking about. And it took me a while to really understand and give myself some credit, because it was through a lot of talking to other people, honestly. It was like, well, do you think that these companies will hire you in your position if they didn't value you? Like, they're spending a lot of money on you. Like, why would they do that? Why would they waste your time? And part of that was that. It was also part of it was like just, you know, believing it, you know, fake it until you make it. Everyone uses that term on me and I don't like it, because I'm like, no, I don't want to fake it. But like some of it I accept, because when you allow imposter syndrome to affect you, it affects your team, because you're leading your team. And if you don't believe in yourself, then how can others? And that affects the project. And so for me, it's like, I have to believe in myself. I have to do it. Otherwise, it's going to be bad for my team. And I care about my team. So that's also another part. But it's also looking at it from a different viewpoint. So like, if it were, it's a lot of like, who do you consider to be you know, an expert in the field, or what do you consider to be a definition of someone who is good at this thing, and then plotting down like actual like metrics, like, oh, they know this amount of information, or they can do this, and then kind of comparing yourself to that. And because it's like, oh, you do know that information, so why are you so down on yourself? And then even then, it's useful, because you're like, okay, maybe you don't know that information, but at least you have like a way to measure that and like aim for it. So you know you're still progressing towards it, and you can be kinder to yourself.
I love how you turned it round, and I think a lot of people can do this, where if you're not going to treat yourself kindly, you can treat others kindly. And somehow that then reflects back for yourself, you know, for your self-perception. You were talking about, well, my team's not going to be happy, so I'm going to look after my team by believing in me. And then you're like, oh, hold on, I'm believing in me. Oh, maybe I can do this after all.
And I want to be honest with that. Like, some part of that, it is like kind of a wavering thing, right? Like, I will fake it, and it doesn't mean that I completely believe in myself, but it is like inching towards that. So I like may, and in the beginning, it was really hard, because a lot of the time it's like, I believe in myself, and it's like immediately, no, absolutely not. That is not how I feel, and it makes me feel worse. It's more like taking those little steps. It's like, okay, maybe I'm not there yet, but here are all the metrics. Because like, if you do not have the metrics, then you're like trying to hit like ever moving target. Like, you never give yourself credit, because you're not measuring it on reasonable standards. It's the same thing with game development. Yeah.
You're always going, but I'm not all the way over there, but actually you're pretty far ahead of maybe where you started. If we can go like back to your career trajectory, because I'm super interested, because we sort of deviated, and I love doing that, because it's how conversations go. But you got your start, they took you on as an entry level position at Big Fish, and that's where we'd got to. So how have you become senior? What was your trajectory? What was your time frame as well? Because I think that's super important for people to hear. And I don't mean like, I plotted in 6 months I would be X, Y, just like sort of a general idea of the flow upwards to the position that you're at now. I think people, it helps to know it's not an overnight thing, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I was in a weird situation because I actually didn't know there were tiers when I joined. Like, I didn't actually know about the differences between seniority, and I didn't really care about promotions because, you know, I was living with my family. Like, I was just happy to have a job, so I didn't really know. But Big Fish was really good in that they had a matrix of like how you progress. And they were really good at advocating for their employees. And so it was sort of like, well, you've been a new designer for this long. We put you on this new project. You were kind of all alone. You satisfied all these things. Like, you improved these metrics. You went out on your own and you did like these design documents. And they had very specific, kind of qualifications. And then once I hit those, they just raised me up to designer 2. And it was kind of like, I really lucked out. Like, a lot of studios don't do this, but Big Fish did make sure that I understood what I was doing and how I got to the next promotion. And so that was really helpful. And then at some point when I moved across studios, I'm kind of a weird instance because I never really cared about the title, even though the title is very important. I was just happy to be designing. So I went to a Graham, and it was just a game designer again. No, like, there was no tiered, no designer 2 or anything, but I was just happy because it's a different type of game, and that's also kind of leveling up in a way.
Because you're broadening your skill set and your knowledge set, aren't you, as you develop sort of different games.
Every type of genre, every game, you're always learning different things, and I learned so much from each game that I worked on and each studio that I worked at, because a lot of it was communication, and it was what are we targeting, and there's different things that different projects are targeting. Some are targeting things like monetization, and some are targeting retention, and some are targeting like community. And so it was a lot of leveling up with that, and also working with other people. And as I gained all that knowledge, a lot of it was, it's strange because a lot of the people I know who want to go into design, they're like, oh, well, I have great ideas and I want to make this type of game. But a lot of it was adapting to the game that is already existing, or a vision that is being defined for you. So it was a lot of, okay, this is what they're going for. It's not what I'm specifically going for. It's what the direction is going for, what the target audience wants, and interpreting that. And so I think that was the shift from junior to senior. It was more like, how can I make this fit this goal, rather than how can I make it fit what I think would be a good game.
No, do you know why I'm smiling so much? Is, again, it's stuff we talk about, and it's this ongoing look, it will be great if you can make every game exactly how you want it, but you're probably going to have to make some stuff that actually isn't your vision and isn't maybe what you want to play. And it's hearing it, but also hearing that shift in terms of like moving from sort of the junior where it feels almost like, well, I'm just making games, this is amazing, like I'm so happy, to more of that kind of really directing where the resources and the attention are going within the design. It's so interesting. Can I ask, I'm just interested, what, and you don't have to name titles, just general genres, what sort of genres were you working on when you were junior, and kind of what was the move to the different genre? I'm just super interested.
Yeah, I was working on a lot of mobile puzzle games. So that's solitaire, card games, match three, or merge games. Merge games were my favorite. But yeah, it was a lot of that. And then it was Cozy Grove, which I can mention, which
Yeah, I
is
just
a
want to be clear, you don't have to mention names if it's not okay. I just want to.
Yeah, it was more of a Animal Crossing like game, so that was a different, altogether different genre because it was also on console. So that brought me into it. And then when I became a senior, it was when I joined Rare. And honestly, I wasn't even focused on the title at that point either.
Still not focused on
Yeah,
the title.
I was just like, wow, like the games that Rare are making are really, outstanding. I want to, kind of dip my toe in that. Like they're working in a different engine. I was usually working in Unity. I wanted to work in Unreal, and I wanted to work on a multiplayer game. And so, I applied with the speculative application, and didn't really expect anything to come of it. But they contacted me and was like, "We think you'd be good for the senior role." And I was like, "Oh no, I don't need." Like, I have been primarily working in mobile and only barely touch console. So I was like, I don't need a senior role. I just want to work in it. And they're like, no, senior. You're a senior. And so I'm very grateful because in my experience, I've had a lot of people kind of advocate for me. But yeah, I think through that experience, I'm like, oh, it is fair to like push for those things and really like give yourself credit where it's due.
No one can see my face, but while you're going, "No, I'm gonna say no, I'm not a senior," I'm like, "No, you are a senior.
It constantly surprises me because when I see other people, I'm like, yeah, they're the same as me, like juniors. But there is like a slight difference because there is like something that you gain through the experience where you're looking at the project as a whole rather than like pieces of it. And I still struggle with that too. I think there's like an extra step once you become like director or that sort of thing. There's different things that you look at and it's like a completely different perspective. It's kind of like when you become a parent, you're like, oh, right. That's what it's like to, that's why my parents acted that way. You just never know until like you've grown into that. And so I think and so being a senior and having that outlined to me, I'm like, or highlighted, I was like, oh, I see it. The more I talk to juniors, I'm like, oh, you don't understand what I'm talking about when I talk about like fitting this specific like feeling or this intention. And so that has been really eye-opening. Yeah.
But hopefully kind of confirmatory that Rare were right and you that's where you should be, because you have that knowledge, and you've acquired that knowledge through the different roles that you've done. And
Yeah.
it sounds like you've been quite intentional in terms of getting those different experiences, that there was
Yes.
intent behind them. It wasn't sort of accidental and, "Oh well, I feel like I need to move on it," but there's like an intention where you're going, "I've learned all I can here. I want to make this type of game. Oh, Rare looks amazing. They're doing the sort of stuff that I would love to do," and kind of offering your CV, the idea of kind of speculative CV. I just out of interest, because obviously a lot of students, I hope, will be listening to this, and part of that process probably will be speculative CVs, even just on graduation, just sort of spelling out their interests and intentions. What do you feel? And it doesn't have to be specific in relation to you or what you put in, but what do you think makes a good speculative CV? What do you think people are looking for from something that they're not actually asking for in terms of a CV?
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe I'm not the best person to ask for
I
this
think you're the perfect
because
person to ask.
when they like accepted my speculative application, I was sort of like, really? Like, what do you want from me? Like, why me? And I think I think from what I've heard, a lot of it was not like specifically what I had in my CV, although a lot of that helped. Like I have free-to-play experience and some things in mobile that can translate to live games well, because live games are newer in console, the console world. Well, not so much now. They're more more
From back
familiar with it
in
now, but back
the
in the day, yes. But I think it. I did a lot of game jams, and they saw that. And it wasn't specifically just game jams. Our like the game jams that I work with my friends on. They're very strange and intentional too. We always try to, when we meet, we try to go for something. So it's like, what are we going to work on? Multiplayer. What do we want out of this? So I want to try a survival aspect. And so, and when we do it, we're like, okay, well, because we're already working on these sorts of things, what's something different that we wanted to try that like we never were able to try or we haven't seen anyone do? And it's not like, oh, we're going to make a good end product. It's more like, what can we experiment on? What's going to be like really strange? So it was mostly that. It was out of our own curiosity. And it was also, I had some solo projects, and then I had some projects that were with the same people every year. And so that showed that, like, the extent of what I can do on my own, and that I'm motivated to do that. And it's also, that people want to continue working with me. And that's like, yeah,
I
a lot
think
of soft skills.
so. Well, okay. Whoa, soft skill. Yeah, because you know when you went, no, I'm not the right person to ask. You have just given me such an amazing answer, because what we get a lot, and again, I'm pointing this towards students because I do work in a university, and they are in that respect my first priority. Like, I want them to go into industry because, you know, that's where they want to be. But a lot of that sort of fear of moving into the actual sector is, but what can I actually demonstrate? Because I haven't had a job in industry. And there's that sort of assertion that if they haven't already, while they're at university, had a job in a game company, what on earth can I show? And what you've said is amazing. That idea of actually doing your own game jam, participating in game jam, doing a solo project that is just for you to extend your ability. So amazing, because you're sort of, this is not negating all the experience that you'd acquired and everything that you'd done in industry, but the fact that they are still looking at those aspects shows how much value they actually hold.
Definitely, they're definitely looking those aspects, and like it's, you can tell when someone's naturally interested in these sorts of things because you can see them doing different things. It's like, okay, now that I've learned the basics, I know how to make like a farming game. Then you see them deviate from that. You're like, oh, well, what if I make something like weird with this farming game? Like, what's a weird mechanic? Or like exploring different ways to do a farming game. Like if like you had like 2D farming game, 3D farming game, like different camera angles. It's like, okay, maybe you're interested in the 3Cs. Maybe you're a 3Cs designer. Like it really helps you explore what type of designer you want to be as well. But just that exploration is very valuable.
And also having something that might not be perfect, and this is again that getting over it not being perfect, because you're a single person, it's not a game company making the game, it's you, that you are interested enough to do this in your own time, that you are still experimenting and trying new things. I just think it's so good to hear you say that, because I think people do genuinely sort of set out almost beleaguered before they even start trying to apply for jobs, because they feel that I've not done a company
Yeah,
job, therefore, oh, why would anyone look at me? Well, because you're passionate and you're making things, and
it's so tricky. Like it's so hard. I was so lucky because, you know, I'm sheltered and my parents give me support, so I never had to worry for a job, but it's really hard to enjoy it while you're like, I need to make a living. Like I need a job. What am I gonna do?
I completely appreciate that. But I think just from that angle of sometimes, yes, we have to earn money while we pursue where we want to end up, if that makes sense. So, you know, you go and do your fast food job.
Yeah.
I won't name a company. There are many fast food companies. But there's loads from that that you can take forwards. There's yes. communication, there's teamwork, there's actually working with people who are not from the company. So there is customer facing stuff, but also being knowing from someone like yourself that actually the stuff that you're doing in your spare time, the game jam you're doing with your friends, actually still has value, I think is incredibly, incredibly important to hear. That you're not just finished because you didn't graduate straight into a job, that right. there's still stuff you can do and demonstrate that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything is valuable. I'm kind of like, everything's valuable, but I really do think it's true. Like, every game jam, and the key with the game jams was like, it's scheduled for me, so we do it every year, and it's been very nice because the people that I go into it with, they aren't expecting anything from it other than just the experience itself. We're like, okay, we enjoy each other's company. We want to make something weird and interesting. And that's the only thing we expect out of it. And so
you'll get a benefit because you've enjoyed the experience.
Yeah.
Amazing. But it's so important to hear that as well, because again, I think people get a little bit demoralized when the thing hasn't turned out perfectly, that it's not, you know, ready to sell, you know, that there's sort of some there's experience and learning in doing the thing rather than having perfection at the end of it.
It's also the whole thing about getting into the industry, but like also mm-hmm. have to work a different job, like everything, at least for design, it's everything is useful. Like I was a barista for a while, like I modeled and I figure skated, and every little thing has helped in designing. Like sometimes it's like, okay, I'm making experience where you are a barista in a game. I'm like, wow, who would have thought this information would come back? And like,
that's not how you make a latte. Oh
yeah. And in some games, like, oh, we have like something that feels like figure skating, and like, I know what that feels like. Well, wow. Amazing. Who would have thought? But like every little thing helps, and even working in customer support, I loved working in customer support because I got to understand the audience really. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole different perspective, and every little perspective you can gain will help you towards like being a designer at the very least, and I think any discipline. I found shadowing other people really helpful. Sometimes I try to dabble in other areas like 3D modeling, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. All of that is going to help, because when you're a designer, you consider your resources. You have a limited amount of resources on a project, and you want to get the game done, and games are so expensive and so it takes so long to make. Mm-hmm. Any way you can optimize that development and understand the process for all the other disciplines will help towards your design. You'll be like, oh, I'm designing this thing, but if I design it in this way, it's too expensive for art. Maybe there's other ways we can like make that a little clearer. And then all the areas where you don't know, you collaborate with those people and you figure it out together. So it's all valuable.
So we're reaching the end of the time that I have kind of like booked with you. So I don't want to run over it because your time is precious and valuable. What would you say to someone who's sort of at the end of their degree, getting ready to start moving into the sector? What advice would you offer? And it doesn't have to be definitive and this is how you get a job, but just in general, what advice would you offer people just starting out in the industry, especially women moving into it as well, if you don't mind kind of focusing towards that as well, if you can?
That's I have so much
hard questions to just finish out on.
I have so much. I'll just ramble like I think I've gotten a lot from experimenting and like really, you know, looking at different perspectives, gaining different perspectives, like, you know, trying different things. Really, like I gained a lot from that. And also to be kind to yourself, like celebrating your wins and your achievements. Mm-hmm. I had a hard time where I didn't think I was, you know, was succeeding in anything, but like one of my managers told me to keep a list of everything that I accomplished for the day, and it really helped, especially with CV building. It was sort of like, oh, I have done a lot, and a lot of these things are very specific things that other people wouldn't have. And so making a list of those things and being kind to yourself and acknowledging what you've accomplished is gonna help motivate you to keep going, and you know, kind of keep true to your own interests as well. Like if you, while exploring these different perspectives, feel like you're kind of gravitating towards a certain way, like don't go counter to that. Like explore that, and it may not be what you wanted, but I've always found that that's helped me. I've always landed in a place that I am satisfied and happy with. So I would say pay attention to those feelings.
But I think, so for someone who's just rambled that answer, I think that's an amazing answer for something that you've just plucked from the ether with my very horrible question at the end of our chat. Nina, thank you so much for taking the time out. Genuinely, the stuff that you've kind of offered, I hope is going to be super helpful to people that listen to this, because everyone's got their own journey, I know, but hearing someone else's, I think genuinely is super helpful. The doubts, the highs, the lows, all of the good stuff and the bad stuff, I think really helps people. So thank you so much for being a guest on the pod.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And that's Game Changers. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully we will have another amazing episode next month. Do tune in. Thank you. Bye.